Welcome to the Zillionaire Superstars podcast show with Angie Z. I'm a mindset coach, host of Zillionaire Superstars podcast show, and designer of Zillionaire Creations, entrepreneurial clothing line. I know the road to evolution starts with understanding the power of your mind. The problem isn't with what you're doing, it is how you're thinking. The Zillionaire Superstar podcast show shares with you the mindset tools and techniques used by successful entrepreneurs and business owners that created their level of success today, and shares how you can also do the same. So, welcome, Nicholas and Chris.
Hi, Angie.
Hey, I'd love the audience to get to know you a little bit before we get started. So, first of all, what do you do?
Well, let me start. I'm originally from Germany. I moved to the US in 2011 to go to business school. After business school, Chris and I started this company called Carlypso. We were selling used cars online. Think of Amazon, but for used cars.
Okay.
And so we grew that over 4 years and sold it to a company called Carvana, which was much bigger at the time, and we joined them. And so now Carvana is the most valuable used car retailer in the US, just like Amazon retailing autos, though.
Fantastic. What separates your business from other businesses that sell cars?
Chris, do you want to go into that?
Yeah, so the premise of Carlypso was actually to try and shortcut the supply chain of cars as short as possible. And so where most dealers buy a car and then hope you buy it, what we did is instead we said, here's all the cars available that are upstream of dealerships right now. So further, essentially, these are cars that are coming off lease or off rental. And we said, if we can find a customer who might want that car, then we'll only buy the car if the customer wants it. And the idea being, if we could sell the car quicker, that we could charge less for the car, so we would have a more efficient supply chain.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Very cool. And so now with this new business, can you tell us a little bit about With Clutch?
Sure. When we were selling cars, we obviously had a lot of customers in the US, that's very typical, who wanted to finance their vehicles. And so what the usual behavior is, people find cars online, visit the dealership, fall in love with the car, and then ask the dealer, hey, I need financing, can you help me with getting a loan? And so dealers obviously say, yes, of course I want to do that, mainly because they make a lot of money on these loans. So when you go to the dealership and you let the dealer give you a loan, he won't give you the loan that's best for you. He'll give you the loan that pays him the highest referral fee.
That
leads to people overpaying on their monthly payments. And you can fix all of that through refinancing.
Love it. Love it. You guys are real problem solvers. It's wonderful. So, Chris, tell us, where do you live?
I live just south of San Francisco, so a town called Half Moon Bay.
Beautiful. And what about you, Nicholas?
I have an apartment in San Francisco. Carvana, the company that acquired us, is in Phoenix. And so I have a little house in Phoenix, and now that everybody's in lockdown, and I preferred being in a bigger house with a little yard versus an apartment in San Francisco. That's why I decided to spend the summer, our summer here in the US, in Phoenix. So I'm in Phoenix right now.
Oh, very cool. Awesome. What's Phoenix like?
Hot.
Hot?
It's incredibly hot. It's the middle of the desert.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, it's winter over here, so I think you're in a good place. I love the heat. It's beautiful.
You're welcome to come.
Thank you. Chris, tell us what your favorite book or podcast show is.
NPR does a daily news recap in the U.S. here that is like an up first podcast that I always listen to because they just give it these 5-minute news snippets, so I feel like I'm impartially informed about the world each morning. And then I also love The Daily from the New York Times. They do these in-depth pieces. They're typically 20 to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I love consuming new and random information, or like discovering information. I find they both great ways of like discovering new pertinent relevant information in a way that I couldn't have found out about it myself.
Yeah. Awesome. It is helpful to have that. I'm a curious person myself, so I love that sort of thing. Nicholas, what about for you?
I This will sound weird, but I let Chris consume everything, and then he summarizes the important facts and gives them to me. So that's how I get my news, since he's the curious guy. The other podcast I love is How I Built This, from Guy Raz, also from NPR. That's just really fun and inspiring to hear these entrepreneurial stories and journeys.
Nice. Awesome. Favorite charity?
Favorite charity? There's in San Francisco, there's a gospel church in the middle of the Tenderloin, which is in the middle of the city and a rather poor neighborhood. If you've seen the movie The Pursuit of Happiness,
oh yes,
that's the neighborhood where all of this takes place. And so at some point, what's most in the movie is in a church. And so that church is an amazing charity where people from all races and all religions come together and celebrate on Sundays. It's actually less church and more celebrating humankind. And so I love that event and love going there and donating to it.
Oh, that sounds amazing. That's beautiful. Beautiful. What about for you, Chris?
It's not a direct charity, but when I give money philanthropically, I end up giving a lot back to my university.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is I feel like the university's done a great job of finding underprivileged kids to try and help them be able to better afford school, and it really ends up being a life-changing career path. So,
yeah,
like I got friends who benefited from this, and so I feel like it's a first-hand way of actually getting money to correct some of societal shortfalls.
Fantastic, brilliant. What about your daily success ritual? What does that involve?
It's going to be very different between the two of us.
Who wants to go first?
Chris, you go first. I'd have to think about that.
I have very strange energy at moments in time, and so I can only work in very short bursts. I can't do continuous activities.
Yeah.
And so I find that for me, it's actually to almost have a much looser schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And then tone down myself by 15-minute increments if I have to get something done.
Nice.
So if I really need to do something, I can only really intensely do something for 15 minutes at a time. Otherwise, I lose attention or can't get in the appropriate rhythm, and then I sort of need these mental 5-minute breaks in between. So that's been super helpful for me. The other thing is just making sure that there's an hour to 2-hour block in the day to exercise. And so for me, it means going cycling, and that's been really helpful to help concentrate more longer.
Yeah.
And I typically in the evening, but I think that's super important for me.
Fantastic. Yeah, definitely. Exercise is number one. Makes you feel amazing. What about for you, Nicholas? Do you have anything set?
Yeah, I used to be a professional athlete. I played on the German golf national team, and so I just used to be very athletic. And then I started my professional career, worked, and so I became a little, not less athletic, but obviously exercised less regularly. And so what I found for myself, and I think I started doing that 4 years ago, is going on a run in the early morning. So get up, force myself out of the house, go for a 30 minutes run. That helps me clear my mind, and then I feel less anxious throughout the day and feel like I'm much more successful. Also, I'll be in a much better mood.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's definitely the key. I love exercising for both those reasons. Can't live without it. So how are you guys surviving at the moment, given, I think you said, was it March or April that you've been in lockdown, so to speak?
It started end of March for us.
Yeah.
And so San Francisco is a state full of very intellectual people. If you tell them, lock yourself in, it's dangerous outside, everybody does it.
Mm.
There's other cities in the U.S. where people didn't take this seriously at all. But San Francisco went into lockdown. Everybody sheltered in place in a very disciplined way. And so I've been traveling a lot, like a lot over the last couple of years, lots of international weddings and then fun trips. And so as weird as it sounds, got a little tired from traveling.
Yeah.
And so me being locked down with my two roommates, two ladies, both of them entrepreneurs in San Francisco, allowed me to have incredible quality time with them again,
mm-hmm.
Reconnect with what feels like family because the rest of my family is in Germany. And so I really, in a weird way, enjoyed the last 8 weeks, spending a lot of time with people who are close to me.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. What about for you, Chris?
I don't know that, like, not going to work or not going to changed a lot, but outside of that, like, I mean, it's tough not seeing friends. That's obviously very difficult, and so I'm doing more exercise than I otherwise would have, because that's a way to pass the time. And then I've had this ongoing car project that has just been never-ending optimization, and now I'm finally at a point where I can sort of start to finish that.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool.
You need to understand, Chris is a huge car enthusiast. His first car was a DeLorean, the one from Back to the Future. You know, the one with these doors that go
Yes.
Yeah, and so now he got rid of that because his mother wanted him to, and then he started building his own car from scratch when he graduated from MIT.
Oh, wow. Very cool. How long will that take?
Too long. A lot longer than I thought.
Really? So yeah. Where did your passion for cars come from?
I think probably twofold. My dad was into it somewhat, and then I think we sort of built on each other. And then through my friends growing up too, that was the other area that we anchored on. So like it became this self-fulfilling phenomenon. As you sort of got more into it, you found more people that were into it, that were more into it. And so it just became this you know, self-feeding prophecy.
And Nicholas, you're not as much as an enthusiast as Chris, or?
I never liked cars, and now I feel like their liability, because I've dealt with them over the last 7 years, and they've created a lot of headache for me professionally. But now, you'll laugh, and I'm really tall. I'm 6'4". That's 193, I think, in centimeters. I have a little Mini Cooper in Germany that's been waiting for me ever since I moved to the US 9 years ago, and I love that little one a lot.
Very cool. I'm surprised you can get in it, given how tall you are.
Barely. But it's cute.
So, Chris, what's your all-time favorite car? Like, what would you just go crazy about? Which car?
That's such a tough question for me, because it depends on the day. But I really like, the early 90s, late 80s supercars. That's sort of my favorite generation, because that's when I was a kid, and that's the stuff I really like. So, like a early Ferrari F40 is on my list, or a McLaren F1 LM. These totally unattainable, both of them. But
so you've seen all the car movies then?
I've seen all the car movies. Yeah.
What do you have a favorite?
Of the Disney ones or of the
like Rush.
I like Rush. A good story. I actually think the story itself is better than the movie portrayed.
Yeah.
There's a 2011 documentary on Senna that came out by Asif Gafadia that's really good. So that's probably my favorite car film.
What's that one called?
It's called Senna.
Senna. Okay.
I thought the Ford Ferrari film that came out recently was really good too.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that. I want to see that one, actually. Yeah, very cool. You just reminded me of that. I also love cars. I think it's just so much fun. I think, though, like a car can look amazing on the outside and it can be, you know, beautiful inside, but it's all about the way it drives. Like if you get in the car and it has all those nice things and then it doesn't feel right when you're driving it, forget about it. It's all about the drive. Hey.
Which one is your favorite car?
That's a good question. I do like the Bentleys. I love the Bentleys. Okay. Yeah, they're beautiful. And actually, I absolutely take them with the Audis as well. I love Audis. So nothing too crazy, but yeah, a Bentley is a beautiful car, I gotta say. Yeah, very nice. Okay. Very swish. So tell us, guys, like, obviously you've been in the car industry for a while. What are some of the, what would you say is one of the biggest challenges that you've been able to overcome, and how did mindset help you to do that?
Let me take a crack at that first, Chris, and then you just fill in the blanks or gaps. So when we first started, we helped our classmates sell cars to other private people, and you list them on Craigslist, which is the biggest classified network in the US.
Yeah.
And I expected, if I'm polite, people are going to be polite to me. And I was very surprised how rude people are when they buy used cars. And I first took it very personally, because I thought, like, what did I do that that caused this other person to be so angry. And then I learned over the time, it's just a space where people always suspect they're being scammed or being treated poorly. Dealers are making more money than they should, and it's not very transparent. And so, like, it took me a long time to understand that it's just a space. It's not me personally, which then the flip side of that made it clear what the challenge is that is ahead of us. It's clearly changing perception of the entity that sells the car to them, and removing all the information asymmetries and the invisible barriers between the institution selling the car and the customer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's a really important point that, you know, obviously if you're not in the industry and experiencing it firsthand, it's so true. Anytime you talk about sales and selling, like, car salesmen always get the worst rap. Like, it doesn't matter, you know, who you speak to. Everyone's either had a bad experience, they've been scammed, they didn't get a good deal, whatever the case might be. And yeah, I think you're right. Even if they take their car back to be serviced, they sometimes are worried that they're going to get ripped off. And, you know, particularly a lot of women have that experience as well. And so, yeah, it's really interesting. But people's feelings around this are quite strong, aren't they?
It's a super emotional purchase.
Yeah.
Very emotional.
Yeah, it's a good way to say it. Absolutely. So how did you overcome that? Like, how did you stop taking it personally and just realize it was the industry itself and the space, and it was a matter of changing perceptions?
Yeah, that's a good question. It ended up becoming a very motivating factor because it really clarified what are we trying to achieve. Like, when you start a company, you can't do it for the money because, like, it's just too hard of a journey and too long of a journey for money to be the ultimate motivator. And so I didn't feel like money was my prime motivator, but I wanted to build a big company, and I thought it's also for financial reasons. But then I quickly realized that the goal is actually something different. The goal is to fix a broken market. And then for as long as I felt customers were treating me poorly or it felt like they were angry, that was a reminder to me that I hadn't done my job quite yet. And so over the years, what we achieved is that we went from a company where customers were very skeptical to building a brand where customers started trusting us, and the messages that we conveyed and communicated started to resonate. And so I feel like at the end of the 7-year journey that we went through, where we're selling used cars to private individuals, we achieved changing the way people looking at used cars or buying used cars. And it was a long journey, but that's where we ended up.
That's brilliant. Yeah, I really love that. That's amazing. The fact that it became a motivating factor for you. It's a very powerful driver. So what would you say has been your highlight for, you know, because you've started now a second company around the car industry. What would you say has been your biggest win or success?
Let me think, Chris, what was it for us?
I think you go through multiple successes throughout the whole thing. And so, like, I think of a couple key points. You know, being able to close our first big round of fundraising was a big milestone for us because it validated that, you know, we had validated this conceptual idea that we had, and it seemed that if we, you know, could do more of it, that we would be more effective. And so that was a way of validating these early experiments and showing that we had built a team and a concept that could perform. I think getting to the end of closing the Carvana deal, such that we sold the business, was also a huge milestone and a big relief for us. And so each of these were, like, meaningful in different ways at different times of the business life cycle too. So, and then there were some painful moments that were, like, the best growing experiences too. So
yeah,
I look at those and, like, you need to learn equally from successes and failures. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, failure doesn't feel as good, but
yeah, 100%.
Because you only realize you were doing it wrong once you sort of, it doesn't work out how you want it.
That's right. But we do learn so much more from our failures as well. And look, a lot of entrepreneurs go through the fundraising experience as well. What was that like for you guys? How would you explain it?
It was actually relatively binary. So We had 3 rounds of funding. So describe each of them slightly individually. One was after business school, when we were selling our classmates' cars, didn't even think this was going to be a business. And one of our professors approached us. We had a chat over beer and said, you know what, you should be selling cars. And if you want to make this a business, here's $50,000 to get started. So that was obviously amazing. We didn't even ask for money, and professors and lecturers encouraged us. And then when we aimed to raise somewhere around $300,000, and all of a sudden the demand of people wanting to get involved was overwhelming. We ended with $1.2 million, which we had never even imagined we could get to. So that was round number one.
Yeah.
Round number two was very different. We thought we had something that worked to some extent, but not really. A competitor was raising a lot of money, and so we went out hoping that we could just ride that wave too, and nobody was interested. Everybody was scared because there wasn't a competitor with a lot of money, and we hadn't had enough traction to justify another big funding round, so that was very frustrating.
Yeah.
But as I said, Binary didn't happen, really. And then we stumbled into something that worked much better than everything we'd done before, and all of a sudden, we didn't need money to survive, but fueled growth.
Okay.
And so that ended up being a really easy round again. And so we learned a lot through these 3 different rounds of different experiences, all of them slightly different in a way.
Yeah, that's very cool. How long was that entire process, roughly? The 3 rounds?
First process, 4 to 6 weeks probably. Happened really quickly.
Yeah.
The second process that didn't work, we probably took hundreds of meetings for the period of 4 to 5 months and went nowhere.
Wow.
And then the last process happened really quickly too. We got a term sheet, which means an investor was interested in investing at certain terms within 3 to 4 weeks of talking to them.
Yeah.
So it happened really quickly.
Cool.
If people want something, they'll ask for it. If they don't want it, they'll just like let it go and kick the can down the road, and you never know that it's actually a no.
Yeah, definitely. So how did the sale of the business come about?
Chris, do you want to walk us through that?
Yeah, I mean, that was a really active process. And so when it came to selling the business, we sort of got to a state where we said, hey, you know, what we're doing in the exact form that we're doing it, and that's selling cars and being an operationally intensive business, it's not going to work. And it's too capital intensive for what we think are good returns for investors. And so we said, look, we do have some valuable software. Let's see if that software is applicable within some of these businesses that are already operating heavy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we talked to a number of folks that we thought would find it valuable. I think some cases were more obvious than others, but, you know, Carvana was one of the only retailers who was selling cars online completely at the time.
Mm.
And what our software was really good at was both evaluating the price of a car and figuring out all the features. And we had to do it because when we sold online, if you didn't have the features exactly right, customers were angry.
Mm.
And so we had developed software to sort of do this, and then we went ahead and we got to talking with them, and one thing led to another, and we said, hey, this is a place that we feel comfortable, you know, taking our team to, and that seemed to be able to make use of our product. So it's really about sort of seeing the end of the Carlypso journey.
Wow. Cool. Very cool.
There were two major lessons here. Number one is we first aligned on a personal level with the guys at Carvana. We just realized we were very close, very similar values, very aligned in terms of mission and what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And then we also happened to have a product that they liked and were willing to pay for. That's how it came about. The other nuance that I think was really interesting, we built a company that was selling cars, but we ended up selling a software company.
Right.
So what that means, you just need to be open-minded and just look to the market and customers and figure out where are you creating most value as an entrepreneur. And in our case, for 4 years we thought it's selling cars, and for the last month we realized it's selling software.
Wow, that's very cool. That's very cool. So did you have any role models or anyone that you look up to or any entrepreneurs out there that you see that are doing amazing things in the market?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's obviously a lot of people who are very impressive. For us, I think Chris would probably pick the same one. We had a professor. His name is Andy Ratcliffe.
Yes.
He was a venture capitalist early on, first investor in eBay, for example. He started the fund called Benchmark bit more capital that invested in Uber and Snapchat, amongst others.
Mm-hmm.
He had, at that point, left Benchmark Capital, started his own company called Wealthfront, and was a lecturer at Stanford. And that's how we met him and became friends. And he was the first person, he was the person who hung out with me, grabbed a beer, and we were talking about life. And he was the one who said, hey, if you want to make this car selling thing a business, here's $50,000. And so, A, obviously, we appreciate the gesture a lot. It means the world to us, and we would have never done it without him. But we also really love the way he thinks about entrepreneurship in the world and seek his advice every time we don't have data that supports one or the other decision.
Brilliant. It's so important to have role models, right?
Important. So yeah. Important. And it's really hard to find them because it's also, at least in Germany, people don't tend to have mentors. It's just a slightly awkward question to ask. In the US, the mindset of giving back, I think, is much more pronounced. And then obviously at a place in Stanford where like a large portion of the lecturers are people who went through the Stanford experience themselves many years earlier and are there to give back, much easier to find somebody who's actually willing to spend his time and give you advice.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it's so important. Seriously, it makes a world of difference to have that support and sounding board as you progress. So in terms of entrepreneurs out there, for those, you know, whether they're just starting in business or they're more experienced, more accomplished like yourselves, what would you say are the three things around mindset that people need to get a handle on?
One, it just takes a long time. Like you have to be building for a long time instead of thinking that things will go. You could try and make things go as quickly as possible, and there's actions you could do, but You're not going to be at the end quickly. You get to the end of the beginning in a long time.
So it's a marathon.
it's a marathon, and you have to think long term. And two, I think the other thing is too, right? Like you have to, like part of your worldview needs to be that you're going to shift the world to what you want it to be, and not that the world's going to shift to what you want it to be passively.
Wow! Can you say that again?
Yeah, sure. you have to have the worldview that you're going to shift the world to what you want it to be instead of waiting for the world to adapt to what you want.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I think that was part of our key learning at Carvana is just, we always did these quick win experiments and tried to iterate and tried to see if feedback would be immediately received. And I think it's valuable within certain contexts, but I think there's equal balance of sometimes you have to just believe something's true and then work towards that end and inform people that this is going to happen. And sure enough, it kind of does. So
I love it. It's amazing talking to both of you today. Seriously, love cars. So thank you, talking about my favorite topic. How can people connect with you? What's the best way to get in touch?
The easiest way probably is to just look us up on LinkedIn. So if you're Angie, add a description or add our names to your description, then just look us up on LinkedIn, connect with us, and we look forward to talking.
So Chris Coleman, Nicholas Hinrichsen.
Hinrichsen.
I said it right before, didn't I?
You did well.
It was an absolute pleasure talking to you both today. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to the Zillionaire Superstars podcast show. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your comments and reviews, so please leave a review on iTunes. For further information, visit angelinazimmerman.com, and I can't wait to catch up with you next time.